Imagine you're holding a digital dollar. It looks exactly the same as any other digital currency,
Oh,
right?
totally identical on the surface.
Yeah, it spends the exact same way, and it lives entirely on the blockchain. But starting in March 2026, if that digital dollar isn't backed by the exact same physical cash-like sitting inside a highly regulated, independently audited Hong Kong bank vault, it is virtually worthless in the eyes of the law.
It really is. I mean, the era of simply deploying a smart contract and, minting your own digital currency out of thin air, that window is closing fast.
Closing very fast.
Yeah. What we're looking at now is the really aggressive imposition of traditional ironclad financial architecture right onto the base layer of Web3.
Which is just wild to think about. But anyway, welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are exploring this massive structural earthquake in the global digital economy.
A literal earthquake for the space, yeah.
Absolutely. And we're drawing from a really comprehensive legal analysis provided by the Xiao Sao lawyer team. They've laid out the impending rollout of Hong Kong's very first batch of fiat stablecoin issuer licenses.
Which officially drops by the end of March 2026.
Right. So our mission for you today is to unpack the specific mechanics of how this new regulatory playbook actually works. We're going to figure out who the ultimate winners and losers are, and crucially, how you can navigate this transition without crossing regulatory red lines.
Because those lines are suddenly being heavily policed.
Exactly.
Yeah, heavily policed.
And if we set the scene here, just looking at the backdrop of Hong Kong, this massive illuminated financial hub bridging the East and the West, this development is far from just local news.
Oh, definitely not.
Right. It represents a total paradigm shift. I mean, for years, the defining feature of the cryptocurrency market was regulatory ambiguity.
Yeah, the Wild West.
Exactly, the Wild West. It was a frontier where you just had to trust that the issuer of your digital token actually held the underlying collateral. Which brings us back to August 2025, right? When the stablecoin ordinance officially took effect in Hong Kong.
Right, that was the turning point.
Yeah, and the Xiao Sao legal analysis points out that prior to this ordinance, the industry was just plagued by what they call unlicensed chaos.
Unlicensed chaos is a great way to put it.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just chaos, right? Ambiguity was practically the business model for a lot of these offshore crypto entities.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they could leverage deposits, rehypothecate collateral, and essentially operate like shadow banks without any of the oversight. But now the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, the HKMA, is stepping in and basically ripping that entire model apart.
They really are. They are mapping prudential financial regulations directly onto digital assets. Let's look at the actual mechanics of what the HKMA is demanding here. First off, issuers must have a minimum paid-up capital of 25 million Hong Kong dollars.
25 million. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, for a traditional bank, that's just a rounding error,
Who's
right?
it?
Sure. But for a Web3 startup that's, used to bootstrapping a protocol with a laptop and a dream, requiring 25 million in hard paid-up capital before you can even apply for a license is just, it's a massive, impenetrable barrier to entry.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Okay.
The capitalization requirement is really just the cover charge,
Right.
just to get in the door.
Yeah. The reserve demands are where the math gets brutal. They are demanding 100% high-quality liquid asset reserves.
Which is huge.
Right. They cannot be fractional. You can't just take the user's deposits and lend, 80% of them out to generate high yield returns.
Which, by the way, is how a lot of decentralized finance platforms traditionally make their money.
Exactly. And to top it off, these reserves have to be independently custodied and audited in real time.
And that real-time auditing requirement, that is the technical bottleneck here.
Really? How so?
Well, think about traditional finance. In TradFi, audits happen quarterly or maybe
You're
annually.
right. But when you're dealing with blockchain technology where tokens move at the speed of light, the HKMA expects the banking software to communicate seamlessly with the on-chain ledger.
Oh, wow. So they have to prove it constantly.
Yes. Minute by minute, they have to prove that every single token in circulation has a matching fiat equivalent in custody. And furthermore, issuers have to guarantee T plus zero redemption.
T plus zero,
Yeah.
meaning if you hold their stablecoin and you decide, hey, I want actual fiat currency back in my traditional bank account, they have to process that redemption and clear the funds the exact same day.
Right. And mechanically, ensuring two plus zero redemption at that kind of scale means the issuer cannot hold their reserves in anything remotely illiquid.
So no tying up the money.
Exactly. Even long-term government bonds become a risk. They have to hold cash or extremely short-term equivalents.
That is so strict.
It is. And on top of these hard metrics, the soft metrics require the implementation of traditional anti-money laundering systems.
Ah, the AML stuff.
Yeah. We're talking about comprehensive KYC, or know your customer protocols, embedded directly into the issuance and redemption processes.
Which fundamentally strips away the anonymity that early crypto adopters really championed.
It totally does.
You know, this sounds like crypto is finally being forced to get a corporate job, put on a suit, and show its receipts to the HR department.
That's a perfect way to put it, yeah.
They're basically treating stablecoin minting with the exact same gravity and like the exact same paranoia as printing physical paper money.
Because economically speaking, it is the exact same thing. The HKMA is putting an end to the whole debate over what a stablecoin is.
Right.
They are declaring it systemic financial infrastructure. I mean, if an algorithmic stablecoin collapses, a few crypto traders lose their shirts.
Sure.
But if a licensed fiat-backed stablecoin that's actually integrated into the broader Hong Kong banking system collapses, that could trigger a contagion event that bleeds into the traditional economy.
Which they obviously want to avoid at all costs.
Yeah. Exactly. Compliance is no longer a marketing buzzword. It is the absolute baseline for survival now.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Because these rules are so incredibly stringent, it leads to a very logical filter. Who actually survives this gauntlet?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. Both Chief Executive John Lee and Financial Secretary Paul Chan confirmed the March 2026 rollout in the budget, so the timeline is set. Who gets these golden tickets?
Well, HKMA President Eddie Yu has established an explicit guiding principle for this process, which translates roughly to steady first, rather go short than waste.
Rather go short than waste. Interesting.
Yeah, they are actively avoiding a flooded market. The licenses issued in this first batch will likely be in the single digits.
So quality over quantity.
Exactly.
And the sources heavily suggest that traditional banking giants, specifically Standard Chartered and HSBC, are at the front of the line.
Right.
Which makes mechanical sense. If you think about it, Standard Chartered and HSBC already possess the authority to print physical Hong Kong dollar banknotes.
That's a great point.
Right. They already have the exact reserve management frameworks, the vast compliance departments, and the direct lines to the central bank's liquidity pools.
Yeah. For them, the blockchain is really just another ledger. The underlying financial engine is exactly the same.
Exactly.
And that is the crucial synergy. For a legacy bank, swapping a physical printing press for a digital minting contract is a technological upgrade, not a regulatory hurdle. They already possess the institutional infrastructure the government trusts.
But wait, if we were just handing the keys of digital currency issuance directly to HSBC and Standard Chartered, doesn't this import all the inefficiencies of TradFi directly into the base layer of decentralized finance?
I see where you're going with this.
Like, if massive legacy banks monopolize fiat issuance on-chain, they bring their censorship capabilities, their geographic ring fencing, and their centralized control right along with them. Doesn't that defeat the entire point of Web3?
What's fascinating here is that the HKMA is not optimizing for the decentralized ethos of early Web3 at all.
Oh, clearly not.
Right. They're optimizing for institutional trust. You are absolutely right that this imports centralization. But from the regulator's perspective, letting heavily regulated legacy banks lead the charge provides the ultimate credit endorsement for the technology itself.
So it's about making the big players comfortable.
Exactly. Institutional capital, we're talking pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, massive asset managers, they cannot and will not interact with a stablecoin run by an anonymous team offshore.
Yeah, the risk is too high.
Way too high. But they will, however, interact with a stablecoin issued by Standard Chartered. The HKMA is building a bridge for trillions of dollars of traditional capital to enter the digital asset ecosystem safely.
So the trade-off is ideological purity in exchange for massive institutional adoption.
That's the deal they're making, yeah.
Because these strict geographic controls and compliance layers, they fundamentally alter how the technology could be used across borders, which actually forces us to expand our lens a bit.
We definitely need to look at the macro picture.
Because of these new enforcement mechanisms, the borders around Hong Kong's digital economy are suddenly very real, particularly concerning mainland China.
Oh, the geopolitical positioning here is incredibly delicate. This rollout cements Hong Kong as a critical node in a new regulatory triad.
A triad.
Yeah, positioning it alongside the comprehensive frameworks developing in the European Union and the United States.
Ah, got it.
And under the one country, two systems framework, Hong Kong operates as a prudent but inclusive testing ground. It is the sandbox for mainland China's broader evolution regarding digital finance.
But the sandbox has very strict walls.
Very strict.
The Xiaosa lawyer team analysis highlights a massive legal boundary that is being strictly enforced. These new stablecoin licenses apply only to institutions registered and operating within Hong Kong. Mainland residents face severe restrictions.
Extremely severe.
Right. In fact, using RMB to purchase Hong Kong stablecoins with the intention of cashing out in a foreign currency abroad is explicitly illegal.
Yeah. Mechanically, mainland China operates under strict capital controls, which limits how much wealth a citizen can move out of the country per year.
Right, the foreign exchange quota.
Exactly. And historically, offshore crypto exchanges provided a backdoor for that. You could buy digital assets over the counter with local currency and cash them out globally.
Which obviously the regulators don't like.
Not at all. And the Xiaosa team points out that utilizing these new regulated stablecoins to bypass those limits touches the absolute criminal red line of, and this is a quote, disguised buying and selling of foreign exchange under mainland law.
So what does this all mean? For you, the listener, watching these global frameworks solidify, how do you navigate this? How does a government actually enforce these boundaries on a blockchain that is supposed to be borderless?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the collision of on-chain transparency and off-chain KYC.
Okay, break that down for me.
So when these stablecoins are issued by entities like HSBC, every single interaction with that token can theoretically be mapped. Mainland authorities don't necessarily need to crack the blockchain itself.
They just watch the doors.
Exactly. They monitor the fiat on-ramps and off-ramps. They utilize chain analysis tools combined with traditional banking surveillance to track, say, RMB bank transfers leading to OTC desks.
Wow. So there's nowhere to hide.
No.
Yeah.
A Hong Kong license does not grant immunity from your local jurisdiction's foreign exchange controls. The broader takeaway for the listener is that global finance is fragmenting.
Yeah. It really is.
The concept of regulatory territoriality is paramount now. You can no longer assume that just because a token is digital, it exists in some sovereignless cloud. Geography dictates your legal reality.
Because these territorial borders are suddenly so strictly enforced, Web3 companies can no longer just launch a token globally and hope for the best.
No, those days are over.
They have to completely rewrite their business models to survive in this fragmented, highly policed environment.
Mm-hmm.
And Xiaosa's team actually laid out a very specific survival playbook for this.
They did. For native Web3 companies, the directive is a stark reality check, basically. Give up the dream of obtaining an independent fiat stablecoin license in Hong Kong.
Just abandon it.
Yeah. If you do not have the 25 million HKD paid up capital and the massive compliance infrastructure, you're not competing with the legacy banks. Instead, the playbook dictates a pivot to a B2B model.
Right. You don't build the car, you sell the engine parts to the bank.
That's a great analogy.
Thanks. I mean, these legacy banks might be incredible at managing fiat reserves, but they are notoriously slow at building cutting-edge blockchain technology.
Oh, incredibly slow.
Yeah. They need native Web3 firms to provide multi-signature custody solutions, smart contract auditing, and zero-knowledge proof technologies that allow them to handle AML compliance efficiently on-chain.
Because they can't build it themselves.
Exactly. The Web3 companies that survive will become specialized infrastructure providers embedded inside the bank's crypto vehicles.
Exactly. And for traditional non-banking financial institutions like local brokerages or asset managers, the strategy is partnership.
So they team up.
Right. They won't issue the stablecoin themselves, but they will form alliances with the licensed banks to launch digital asset wealth management products. They will utilize the bank's highly trusted regulated token as the foundation to build new retail financial products.
And for the ordinary investor, the rule from the legal team is surprisingly straightforward. Stay away from the unlicensed, look for the licensed.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. The analysis heavily stresses that these new tokens should be used strictly for their intended purpose, which is rapid cross-border payments and institutional settlements. Stop treating stablecoins like speculative lottery tickets to gamble with.
They are infrastructure meant to be boring.
Right. Boring is good here. But here is the massive mechanical hurdle to all of this. Even if Hong Kong rolls out the perfect, safest, most regulated stablecoin, they face astronomical migration costs.
Astronomical.
Because the vast majority of crypto users are deeply entrenched in using offshore, entirely unregulated stablecoins, primarily Tether or USDT.
The network effects of USDT simply cannot be overstated. It is the dominant trading pair on almost every major global exchange. The liquidity pools are impossibly deep.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because overcoming that liquidity network effect is basically behavioral economics.
Yeah.
It's like trying to get everyone to switch from their favorite, slightly sketchy local dive bar to a highly lit, heavily security guarded corporate lounge.
Okay, I love that.
Right. Like, yes, the corporate lounge is demonstrably safer. The drinks are measured perfectly. The accounting is audited. And you know you won't get robbed in the parking lot.
Sure.
But the dive bar is where all the liquidity is. It's where all the action is. It's where all the trading pairs already exist. And getting people to abandon their established habits and walk away from that liquidity is incredibly hard. Will people actually make the jump?
Hold on. Let me actually write that down. The dive bar versus the corporate lounge.
Go for it.
Because that perfectly illustrates the behavioral hurdle here. Overcoming the inertia of USDT is not just about writing a strict law. It requires massive structural incentives.
Because users don't care about the bank's audit. They care about whether they can trade their token instantly without slippage.
Precisely. To make the corporate lounge appealing, the legacy banks have to convince global exchanges to actually list trading pairs with their new regulated HKD stablecoin.
Which is an uphill battle.
It is. They have to subsidize liquidity pools initially just to make trading cheap. Breaking the inertia requires immense user education. But more importantly, it requires the seamless integration of these new stablecoins into everyday, boring financial flows.
Give me an example.
Well, if an import-export business in Hong Kong can suddenly use a standard chartered stablecoin to settle a cross-border transaction with a supplier in real time, completely bypassing the expensive multi-day SWIFT network process, then the utility suddenly outweighs the habit.
Oh, I see.
But that structural shift is a marathon, not a sprint.
Which really brings the entire narrative full circle. We're watching the Hong Kong Monetary Authority systematically end the crypto frontier. They are forcing the exact same capital requirements, reserve audits, and AML systems used in traditional finance right onto blockchain technology.
A total overhaul.
Yeah. And in doing so, they are crowning century-old legacy banks as the likely administrators of this new digital era, creating a globally significant financial hub that absolutely demands strict adherence to local laws and borders.
And the reason you need to pay attention to this, whether you are managing an investment portfolio, building tech infrastructure, or just trying to understand where the global economy is heading, is because the very plumbing of international money is being re-engineered.
Right before our eyes.
Yeah. We are witnessing the forced marriage of traditional institutional trust with digital, blockchain-based speed. The resulting system is going to be faster, undeniably safer, but infinitely more policed.
The frontier is officially being settled, and the rules are being written in ink. But it leaves us with a final, lingering question for you to ponder long after this audio stops.
What's the question?
Well, if the absolute peak future of cryptocurrency simply looks like massive traditional megabanks issuing heavily monitored, geographically restricted digital tokens under the watchful eye of a government central bank, we have to ask ourselves, did the traditional financial system eventually adapt to the revolutionary technology of cryptocurrency? Or did cryptocurrency just get entirely swallowed by the traditional financial system?
That is the ultimate question.
Did the new sheriff actually tame the Wild West? Or did he just pave over it to build a branch of his own bank? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and keep questioning the world of information around you.